Hello, Writers Craft Academy members, and welcome to our very first expert interview. Today I have with me Carolyn Frechette. Carolyn, welcome.
Hello.
So Carolyn, tell people a little bit about who you are as an author and a writing coach.
Oh my God. So I've been writing forever. I have been teaching how to write for about 12 years with workshops and one-on-one and script doctoring and everything. I have written, actually, I should say I have published 5 novels and 1 nonfiction book about writing unblocked, which I think you are offering as part of your package.
Well, you are offering it. Carolyn has very kindly agreed to let you guys have a free copy of her book, Unblocked, which is really great. So thank you so much, Carolyn, for that.
You're welcome. And I've also been doing comics. I'm a comic book artist. I have an online comic on Tapastic called Some Assembly Required. And that's it. I'm also, this is relevant to the subject. I'm also a passionate player of tabletop RPGs, which involve quite a bit of world building.
As I've discovered, I never did like my time as a D&D gamer or anything, but as I've worked with authors, I've met several who love it and who have taken so much from it in their storytelling. So maybe that's something we can get into.
Yeah, definitely. And I will eventually rope you into doing some of that.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, no, it was never anything that I was against. I was just, you know, too busy playing in punk rock bands to be gaming. Yeah. So, okay, so let's get into today's topic, which is world building. And this is one of these really interesting things that I've discovered as I've been teaching writing now for several years, like you, is that there's so many things as writers that we do intuitively or that we don't even think about. So, you know, when I was doing the novel Writer's Blueprint, and now when I've been trying to think about kind of a 12-step writing process to help organize things within the academy, all these things come up where you're kind of like, oh, how do you make a character? Or what is a good sentence? And I know there's certain things that I just love. So for example, story structure. Story structure is something I'm super into. I'm very conscious of it when I'm doing my plotting and doing my writing. But something that's never, for whatever reason, been something I've given a lot of thought to, never done a lot of work around, is this idea of world building. But I know it's something that certain writers consider really, really essential. And I think it's probably something that I've been doing somewhat intuitively. I'm sure there's some building going on in my novels, but let's just start with the very beginning, very simple here. What is world building?
So actually, world building is when you really consciously build the backdrop to your story. And it is something that most authors do intuitively because most authors, like yourself, write in some kind of version of our current world, but, you know, with maybe something different. And when you do that, you only have to really think about how that something different fits into the world and how it works. But when you're writing something like pure fantasy or science fiction, which is set in a completely different world than our own, you do have to do some world building from the ground up so that, you know, your world feels three-dimensional, consistent, and like something real. It's not just about like describing a place, but it's also about like, you know, customs and everything that make your world feel like the reader is there.
So there's, you know, when I think of world building, there's like the geography, the actual physical world, but then like you said, there's also the cultural element, right?
Oh yeah. There's a ton of work for world building. You can go really, really far in it. People like Frank Herbert went extremely far, like mapping out their planets with, you know, all everything in it. I also like to go pretty far just because it's something I enjoy. For example, my fantasy world, I have the whole like solar system drawn out, even though like they're basically at the steam age and not at all ready to go and explore the stars. But this building the solar system helped me with, okay, well, what are the phases of the moons? How many moons do they have? How many suns do they have? You know, and how does that affect the way that they structure their time? You know, like, do they have 12 months? Because depending on, like, our system is based on the seasons, which is dictated by the Earth's axis and its rotation around the sun, and it's also dictated by the lunar circle, the cycle, which is all astrophysics when you think about it. And, you know, even people who, 10,000 years ago, who were not at all thinking about space as even a place that you could go, were still living their daily lives according to these seasons, because, you know, that's how they plan their agriculture and their food reserves and everything. So there's quite a bit of thinking, but it goes from basic geography to culture and, religion, art form, music, races in your world, and everything is really dependent on each other. So it's like a whole ecosystem that you have to create.
So why is it important? Why does an author need to do this type of work, you know, particularly a sci-fi or fantasy author?
Because there's been so many things written before, and so many fantasy stories, for example, are written in sort of like a knockoff Tolkien world, where you have like your basic high elves and your basic dwarves and your basic, shire backdrop. And it feels taken off the shelf, like, you know, you kind of take this and you set your story in it, and it doesn't give a uniqueness to the story that a full world does. In fact, there's a lot of, you know, I've gone talked to a lot of agents and publishers over the years, and a lot of them in fantasy, in particular, this is what they look for. They look for a world that is truly unique and that they really feel when they get into it. And that's a little bit of the sad part about world building, is that it's kind of like an iceberg, and you do all of that work and just a tiny little thing shows, but because you have all of that work supporting it underneath, that thing feels really authentic and it feels like a real world.
So that iceberg below the surface, what does that look like? What type of work should authors be doing behind the scenes to build out a world?
So, you should really think about what your world is based on. For example, me, I love science. I am very much a science fiction person, but I do write fantasy and I treat it like science fiction. So I map out my star map, my solar system. Then I look at how the tectonic plates move on the planet, which gives me how my currents move in the sea, which gives me which areas are fertile and which areas are not fertile. So which areas would produce the most food and resources, and which would... I'm so sorry.
No problem.
My phone just rang.
You were at tectonic plates.
Yes. So then your tectonic plates will affect how your currents move, and then they'll also affect which areas are fertile and which are not fertile, which means which areas have easy accessible resources. And that also means where you'll have war in your world. So what are the resources that are important to the people in your world will dictate what part of the world people fight over, all that, and how the cultures sort of expand. Ursula K. Le Guin, in her book, The Left Hand of Darkness, she created this world that was called Winter because it was a giant frozen ball of ice. And it was summer, like maybe like a Canadian summer, you know, like a couple weeks out of the year. So yeah, it'll affect how people behave, like our parts of the world that they fight over, and also how their culture develops. So what I was saying about Ursula K. Le Guin, okay, so that will link up pretty nicely. So her world is like a Canadian, winter. So it's winter nearly the whole year, and then they have a tiny little part that is summer, like a couple of weeks. That means that their resources are extremely limited, and survival is harsh and difficult. That affects their entire culture, like the way that they eat their meals. They'll eat like 15 times a day, just tiny little bites, because they don't have that much food to eat. And they'll, suicide is something that is completely unthinkable, because your life is spent so much in surviving that taking someone's life or taking your own life is really out there.
Okay, so I want to go back a second to that question of what do you actually do? So I know, for example, that you're in the process of writing a massive epic fantasy novel. And I know that you've told me you have binders and binders of information. I want to know what's actually in those binders. Like, what are you writing? Do you have like a section that is called like weather? And then you write an essay about the weather, or what is in the binders?
So the way that I do it is I really go geography. So I start by building my solar system, building my planets, you know, the tectonic plates, which dictates how my continents are going to look and which areas are going to be fertile or not. Based on that, I then decide, you know, what are the races that I want in my world? So me, I went with something, I can't tell you everything because spoilers, but I went with the sort of evolutionary theory that most of the intelligent species in my world have evolved from animals. So different animals, birds, cats, monkeys for humans, and I should say apes. But, you know, they've all evolved at different rates. So they're not all technology advanced to the same level. So for example, my bird people evolved a long, long time ago. They're dying out right now, but they have technology that is just beyond even the comprehension of most of the other races. My cat people are pretty advanced. They have a lot of technology that's based on steam power and on magic. But my humans, which I don't call humans because why would they be called humans, which is another reflection, you know, they're kind of at the age of sail. So they're branching out, discovering the world. They have a shorter lifespan, but they reproduce really quickly, a lot quicker than the other races. So they're kind of getting all over the place.
And this is all stuff that you're just writing to yourself in the form of notes?
Yeah, exactly. I have tons and tons of notes on files everywhere. Like I make myself, you know, race templates, like where do they evolve from? And I look at like, you know, for example, my cat people, I really looked at the habits of large felines to see, you know, how they socialize as animals and how that could possibly transfer onto our culture. So for example, they, you know, they're matriarchal, because often the women are alone raising the children.
Yeah.
So marriage is not really a thing that happens in their world because lineage is passed down by the mother. So they don't kind of bother to like have this whole contract of well, you know, this is for sure my son and like, you know, I'm going to pass down because they know who their heirs are. So I do a lot of research. For this. And then when building my cultures and religions and all that, I also look at how the world is situated and where my races come from and to see which races would be most at war with each other and who would be trading with each other. And then I kind of factor in religion, politics, and everything. It's not, it's a pretty big task.
Right. Yeah. And I want to come back to that in a second, but I've been thinking as you were talking that so when I write about a monster, so if I were to write about a swamp monster, I'm not actually writing about a swamp monster. The swamp monster is just the metaphor for the bully who beat me up when I was 12 or for the mean guy on the bus or for my boss at work or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I would never like worry too much about the genealogy of the swamp monster or how the ecology affects him, because for him, it's just like a tool. For me, he's just like a tool that I'm using to talk about humans. Is that different for you when you're writing, say, high fantasy? Yeah, okay, so go ahead. Tell me about that.
Actually, yes and no. Like, my series, Family by Choice, is a supernatural suspense that's set kind of in the world. People have superpowers. There are vampires. There are werewolves. There are monsters, you know. And I don't worry too much about where they come from, because it's sort of an accepted myth that we have as a general culture. So it's not something I need to go too much into, like, why do they have powers? I don't care why they have powers. They have powers because they're mutants. You know, they're born with them, and that's the way they are. Because that's part of our collective mythos, this is not something that you need to construct too much. But when you're, you know, going into an entirely different world, like for fantasy, then that's something that you have to build a lot more. Science fiction is different because it can be set somewhere entirely imaginative, like say Star Wars, or it can be set in a future like Star Trek is. And then all you have to think about is basically, you know, your idea of where the world is going and what you want to show. So for example, Star Trek, you know, has a really optimistic vision of the world and uses aliens as a really concentrated version of a facet of humanity, like the Ferengi and the Vulcans and everything. I'm sure I don't need to explain that to you, but they use this as metaphors for humanity, and humans are the only ones who are absolutely complex in, you know, how their society works and everything. But it has it's built to show that the human race is capable of great things. Dystopian fiction, which is really popular in YA right now and has been for some years.
And which you've also written, right?
Sorry?
And which you've also written, your cyberpunk, yeah. is a dystopian.
Kind of. Cyberpunk is a little bit kind of in between in that it's more of a realistic thing. But anyways, I digress. So dystopia is the complete opposite. So you want to show how bad the world can become if, you know, certain tendencies continue. So for these near future things, it's really a continuation of, like, it's really the what if question of, like, what if this happens in our current world? And then you have science fiction that's set really, really far in the future, like, you know, you have, it really, the level of world building that you have to do depends on the kind of story you want to tell and really the kind of genre you're working in.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, you know, we know we've discussed all the research and background and story building, world building that we're talking about here that you've done for your high fantasy, whereas for your family by choice, more kind of urban superhero stuff, you didn't do quite as much of that type of work. So this world building exercise seems like it's more speaking to genre than it is speaking to just your approach to writing.
Yes and no, because I'm actually going to rewind a little bit, and you said that you didn't do that kind of world building. I did, and I would argue that you did too with your page turner series, but we didn't build the world, we built the town.
Very true.
So that there's always a bit of world building. You want to know, like, I'm writing a comic right now that's set in Montreal. Montreal's my hometown. You know, all the houses that the characters live in are houses that me or my friends lived in. So I don't have to build anything there because I've literally set it in places that I've known all my life. My Family by Choice novels, they're set in a fictional town called New Cambridge. So I had to actually come up with that town, you know, what the businesses are in there. There's a lot of crime fiction in that series. So, you know, which gangs control which part of the town and how they relate to each other and how, like, they dispute their territories and all that. So there was that aspect of world building. So my town feels like a real city because I thought about what's actually in there.
It's such a good point because at the beginning of the page turns, we actually have a map of the town, which is supposed to be kind of like an homage to fantasy books that had, like, Lord of the Rings with these maps. But it was supposed to be kind of tongue in cheek because it's like this suburban town. But the way the map came about was that I just needed it in my writing. As I was writing the book, you know, I needed to get people from here to there and I needed to figure out what was in what part of town. And I eventually drew this map out of necessity. So that brings me to my next question, where we were talking about earlier about how much work this is, this world building. For me, all of the work I do around writing that isn't drafting, so, you know, story plotting or that sort of stuff, like the pre-work, I do to make my writing life easier. Like, anything I do that isn't writing is something that I'm doing now so that the writing is easier down the road. Is it that case with world building? Because it just sounds to me like so much work, like to do all this work that no one's ever going to see. But is it in an effort to make your life easier down the road?
Absolutely. Totally. I would be hitting a roadblock every other page if I hadn't done that work before, because I would be like, you know, kind of just talking about my world. I mean, like our Earth world, and going like, but why is that here? Why is this there? And it would take like 17 complete rewrites to get all this detail in. Whereas if I build my whole world, not only do I have it ready and I know exactly the way that things look, the way that things go, how technology works, how they do everything that they do, but it's also ready if I want to write 50 more novels set in this world.
It sounds quite similar. You know, I've ghostwritten several nonfiction books, and that research is kind of, it's understood if you're doing nonfiction, right? You kind of gather your evidence and your examples, and you have binders full of stuff, and then you pull and pick and choose the most important stuff and piece it together into your nonfiction. So it sounds that's kind of like the approach you do with the high fantasy book.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like in my binders, I have like a whole section that's research. So there are photocopies of books, like say about different kinds of birds, or like, you know, the mating habits of lions or things like that. And then I have like, you know, geography where I have all my maps, because I did draw like entire maps. I have like political maps, demographic maps, tectonic plates maps, climate maps. So I have a bunch of these. Then I have you know, politics and religion and races, and then I have time. So, you know, I have three moons. So one moon, you know, this section of the population calculates their calendar this way, and then this other moon, another section of the population calculates their calendar this way, and this is how they relate. So, you know, you have to have all of this stuff. And obviously nobody in my novel is going to sit down and say, well, we use this and they use that, and our months are so-and-so and their months are so-and-so, and there's 15 months for them and 11 months for us, and this is how they overlap. But, you know, they might say something like, oh, well, next sun return is his birthday. And then you kind of understand by the context that this is a period of the year. And as you read through the book, you get familiar with the world. Same as you're visiting a country and you're kind of discovering, oh, so this is what this means. Oh, and they do things like this here.
Which makes me think about language. And I know in your book, you have different languages for the different races as well, right? And obviously, you know, everyone knows Tolkien did this to a crazy extent. But could you talk a little about that, about inventing languages? And particularly, how much do you actually use them in the book? You know, at what point can you use enough to hint that a language exists without confusing the reader with two paragraphs full of something they can't understand?
So I usually work on the assumption that my characters don't have a babblefish in their ear. Okay. Where I found all this fantasy and everybody could always understand each other and they never had like a language barrier. So right off the bat, my characters are from different parts of the world and there is a language barrier. Certain characters have secondary languages that they can exchange things in, but not everybody can communicate with each other. This changes through the course of the book because, you know, some characters are going to learn a language that everybody understands. But even then, you can tell which language the characters are speaking by the structure of the sentence that they're using, because some characters will always have a broken version of that language, and some characters who were actually fluent with it before will remain fluent. So I don't actually come up with my languages at all. I think about the sonority that I want. So I'm like, okay, well, I want this one to sound kind of like French. I do have a fascination with language. I'm not a linguist like Tolkien was, but I do speak many languages and I love to see how different languages are structured. And this is something that I do with these books. So I think about the sound that I want for each language. And then, you know, when they're crossing into another language and they're making mistakes, I think about how, like, for example, how French is different from English in the sentence structure, and how a lot of native French speakers who have broken English will structure their phrases like it's French. And I do this in how they're learning the other person's language and how they're making mistakes. Also, if I need to come up with a word, like I have a character who's, he just loves to explain everything to everyone. He's just like a walking encyclopedia. He's just a giant geek. And he'll often use the real words, like, oh, well, this word means this, and this title, when you decompose it, this part of it means this, and this part of it means that. And I kind of just come up with this when the story needs it, but I don't have, like, dictionaries.
Okay, gotcha.
So whenever I come across, like, a word, like, for example, lords and ladies, I don't have lords and ladies. It doesn't translate to that. It translates to something else. So they use the original title of the language in the other language that they speak, because it some certain things don't translate very well. Mm. So these I kind of note, and I have, like, a little lexicon at the end of my book that I'm slowly building.
Excellent. I'll show you how lazy I am in my world building. in the page turners, I wanted, like, magic words for things. It's a, like, I think they call it, like, a magic wand, a magihat behend or something like that, which is just like magic wand in Estonian. My family's from Estonia. So whenever I needed something to sound exotic and magical, I just put it in Estonian. So that's the extent of my language world building. But I want to talk about this idea of how much is too much with the world building? Because as someone who works with authors yourself too, I'm sure you know people will sometimes use research or backstory or plotting, all of this work that does need to be done, but they'll go too far with it as an excuse to avoid doing the actual work, which is writing the book. So at what point are you going too far down the world building road? And when do you know it's just time to hit the page and start writing?
I actually don't have an answer for that. Because of its nature, you can take world building very, very far. And, like, as far as I've taken my world building, there's still some parts of when I write that I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. And now I need to actually go and research it. So you're probably always going to come to a point where you're like, well, I'm missing this particular thing, you know. But yeah, you can definitely use it to procrastinate too. So it's all about learning your balance.
Yeah, I mean, if you have every single thing figured out, is that taking something away from the reader? Like, for me, I love to leave big gaps. You know, like, M School was written almost minimalistically in terms of, like, descriptions of anything, and I was really leaving it up to the reader to fill in the blanks. Is there a danger of, like, over explaining the world that you've built?
Oh, absolutely. There's actually a danger of over explaining the world, and there's a danger of under explaining the world, because if you do no world building and you're going into science fiction, you can very, very well happen to, like, build your entire thing, and then your reader's going, like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And why would someone do that? And you know, why this doesn't make sense. And you just said that. How could that and that be compatible? So it is definitely a balance. And I would say it depends on your style as a writer. If you are, as I am, someone who likes to outline and plan very, very, you know, sometimes a little maniacally before you write, then you better do a lot of research and do your world building. And if you're someone who likes to wing it, you might have to rewrite a whole lot, and that's okay. So it really depends on your style. The one thing that's really, really important though, is you have to actually think about everything that is different from our everyday reality on planet Earth here. You have to think, does this make sense with the rest of the things that I have already established in my world? So it's like building up the card castle, right? You need to have your foundation, and then you need to make sure that all the pieces are there to support what you need to be there in your world.
How do you know how much information your reader needs? I'm thinking of this question in specifics to one of the clients I'm working with who's in Writer's Craft Academy. Erica, hello. Her novel is set on a snowflake. She's invented a society that takes place on a snowflake falling through the sky. And so there's this question of, you know, what does she have to invent words for? And what can she just admit that she's a human writing a story that humans are going to read, right? You know, for example, she was really stressed about what they were going to call a day, you know, because the way they would see the sun from a snowflake would be very different or something, right? Those sorts of things, you know, how do you find that balance of inventing words and inventing things, but also not going so far with it that you just confuse the reader?
It's not an easy question. That's what better readers are for.
Yeah.
Really? Because that's going to be your ultimate test of like, is this too much? I was really, really afraid when I first started sending out Burdens of the Suns for bettas, because I was like, well, what if it's too much? Because there is a lot of it. It's high fantasy. It's tons of different words. You know, there's a lot of language barriers and everything. But it came back, and most people who didn't read fantasy to begin with were not lost with it. So, you know, that was kind of a big moment. I would say that there's two rules when you're writing it. Actually, three rules. Let me make that three rules. First of all, if it's important to you, do it. It's your story. So, you know, if it's really important to her that, you know, they call a day something different because they don't see the sun the same way that we do, it's definitely something that should be in the story and that should be thought about. Second rule, it's got to make sense. You know, if she says this about a day and then they just have a normal night, then that doesn't make sense because you're establishing something and you don't have the counterpoint to, you know, balance it. And third, accept that you may have to rewrite and you may have to change a lot of things. And your rewrites may be massive rewrites, like you may need to yank entire parts of your world out or add entire new parts and do a whole lot of research between your rewrites. If you're comfortable with these three aspects, go for it.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's a great response. So for the people who are watching this now who are maybe just starting their first novel or they've never given world building too much thought before, where do they begin? What are some steps you can give them for thinking about this process of building a world?
So I would say the first step is deciding whether you want your world's logic to be based on magic or on science. I'm a big science person, even though I write about magic. Everything in my world has to work with physics, with chemistry, you know, with a little help from imagination, obviously, but it's all based on science, even if it's fantasy. When you base your world on magic, presumably you've read a lot of fantasy, but also a lot of fairy tales. If you're a big reader of fantasy and you've never spent much time looking at folk tales and fairy tales from around the world, this is the first thing you need to do. You need to like take some time and read some fairy tales from Africa or from Japan or China or, you know, Scandinavia. They are very different and they see the world and magic in a completely different way. And you will see how they build their logic according to magic. So, you know, you can build an entire world like this. Like, for example, you know, how do you find your way into the fairyland? You know, is it walking west at sunset? If it's walking west at sunset, well, how come everybody that takes the bus west when the sun is setting doesn't end up in the fairyland? You know, kind of just think about it. It has a logic. It's not based on science, but it's based on a sort of inner logic that has to hold itself together and make sense within its own rules.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. You know, when people say a movie or a book wasn't realistic, you know, none of it's realistic. What they mean is that something has happened during that narrative where the movie no longer obeyed the rules that it had established for itself, right? And
exactly.
I think that's something where world building really comes in hugely, right? Is that things need to make sense within the logic of the world that you have built. You know, and it's funny, you were saying you write more on that as the science writer. I write much more as the magic fantasy writer in that in my sci-fi, it's like Star Wars. They're shooting laser blasters and they're, right? It's, there's no scientific logic behind it.
No, Star Wars is entirely based on magic. It's seen as science fiction, but Star Wars is actually a fantasy, and it's got an internal logic that's based on magic. And a lot of people are asking questions like, you know, what do banthas eat? Sort of thing on a desert planet. And they go into this huge explanation that doesn't actually make sense about what they actually eat. But the thing is, it's just, it's magic. Everything in Star Wars happens because of the Force and because of, you know, magic and everything. So there's certain things that you have to establish in your world, and this is the very first decision you have to make. If you're building a world based on magic, research for you is reading fairy tales. And it's not necessarily going to be looking into evolution or how the movements of the oceans and coral reefs create, you know, habitable zones and all that. That's useless to you. It's going to be, you know, building that logic and finding the areas that are still missing from your internal logic. So if you're building your world based on magic, all of it is your own. You got to build that card castle, and you got to make sure that all the cards are there, or the whole thing falls apart. And this is probably why I write science, is magic may seem like it's super easy, but it's actually the harder one of the two.
And why?
You have to look at everything that you've done.
Right.
Whereas science, you just have to think about how the world works and then transfer it onto whatever you're building.
Mm-hmm. Right. Perfect. All right. Well, Carolyn, do you have any other final thoughts on world building? Actually, no, I have something. Or, well, you look like you had something. Go ahead, and then I have one more thing.
I actually wrote a few blog posts a few years ago that go into really big detail about all those things that I've been talking about, how to build worlds. The first goes into geography, magic, and everything, and then the other goes into how you build societies. And I will send you the link. I guess you can, you have a way of putting them.
Absolutely.
Up.
I'll put them below video this magic. Video. Absolutely. That's great. Thank you, Carolyn. And so I guess my final question is, I've always thought of world building as sounding like a lot of work, but I suspect from my interactions with folks like you is that I think you really like it and you really get joy out of it. So maybe on an ending note here, can you just talk a little bit about the joy of world building and the fun that you get out of that process?
Oh my God, it is so much fun to build entire societies. You have no idea. Well, I know you do have an idea because you're a writer, but it feels creating a story and creating a world, it's the same excitement. You know, when you figure out something about your world and you're like, oh my God, yes. And of course, if they have like a mating ceremony, they're going to offer food and they have to eat it. That's genius. You have the same kind of, you know, genius moments that you do when you're like, oh yeah, and now they're actually going to get together and have that first kiss sort of thing that you do from writing a story. So building a world can be super exciting. And if you don't feel that kind of excitement about building a world, probably steer clear of fantasy.
Yes, definitely. Awesome. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for taking the time to share your expertise with the Writers Craft Academy members and for offering your book to them as well. That's fantastic. I really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.